This is Dana Perkins, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. And today, you are in for a doubleheader. That's right, two recordings back-to-back, both about how the transportation industry and some of the biggest auto manufacturers are changing. In this case, Volkswagen and General Motors. They're taking big steps towards going electric, and they're not the only ones. So first, Mark Taylor and I sit down with Colin McCarricker. He's the head of advanced transport for BNEF. We talked to him about Volkswagen and their recent announcements at their Power Day, which took place on the 15th of March. After that, we sit down with Alejandro Zamorano Cadavid. Now, he focuses on intelligent mobility for us at BNEF, and he's joined by Nicholas Solopoulos, who looks at electric vehicles, and they talk to us about General Motors and their recent plans to pivot their business to being fully electric. Our analyst teams have written a few pieces recently which you might care about. Volkswagen's plan to bridge the Tesla charging gap, GM to deal with electrification transition risks, and then one from the Consumer Electronics Show at the beginning of this year titled CES 2021, GM Outlines EV, Autonomy Tipping Points. If you want to get your hands on them, they're available at BNEF Go on the Bloomberg Terminal or via BNEF.com. As a quick reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and we've got a complete disclaimer at the end of the show. And now let's start the first part of our doubleheader.
Hey, Colin.
Hey, Mark.
So there was a pretty bombshell announcement or group of announcements this week from VW. Can you tell us a bit more about exactly what they said?
Yeah, sure. So VW has kind of emerged in the last few years as the established automaker or the large established automaker who's pushing the fastest and hardest on e-mobility. And a lot of the things that were announced at their Power Day this week kind of just reinforced that. But also they highlighted some new initiatives. So on the battery front, they're aiming to have 6 battery gigafactories running in Europe by 2030. They're also aiming to cut average battery pack costs by about 50% by that date. So that's getting them well into the point where, or well past the point, I should say, where EVs should be fully price competitive on an upfront basis without subsidies with comparable internal combustion engine vehicles. That's an important part of the announcement, just this kind of recognition that one of the biggest automakers in the world sees the future as electric, is aiming for 70% of all of its vehicle sales to be electric, to be pure electric in Europe by 2030, a slightly lower amount in China and North America. So that's a big part of it, is just seeing one of the biggest automakers say, we're getting more and more confident in the technology that we're going to make very big investments. And again, they've been building on some of these investments for a little while, but this kind of crystallized something that had been happening for a bit. And then the other thing that they're pushing a fair bit on is now charging infrastructure. So if you think about where are the last standing barriers to e-mobility, charging infrastructure is still one of them. And it's not a barrier for everybody. There's a lot of people who can go electric without a build out of public fast charging stations because they have 2 cars and they have a garage at home or a driveway that they can charge in. But if we really want to get broad-based adoption across all housing stock, so people who live in high-rise apartments as well, and all income levels, you are going to need a more robust public fast charging network. And Volkswagen is really zeroing in on that as well, saying they're going to commit almost $500 million towards building out public charging infrastructure, both in China and in Europe. They didn't say anything about the US on that front, but there's pretty significant investments they're planning on making there. I think they said 18,000 public charging points in Europe by 2025. And that's actually a sizable increase on what's there. They also flagged in China that the user experience from some of the current charging infrastructure isn't great, and they want to try and improve that. They highlighted that sometimes only around 30% of stations are available for drivers, given that they may be blocked by other internal combustion engine vehicles or the station may be offline. So the way I saw it is them really zeroing in on what are the last remaining barriers to more widespread adoption of e-mobility. And that's really on the battery supply side and on the charging infrastructure side.
Now, both of these things are completely separate businesses, though. When you think about it, you've got the automotive manufacturers, then you've got the battery manufacturers, and then you have the charging networks, at least the public charging networks that are, you know, oftentimes provided by also third parties and different companies. So how is VW getting this done? Are they building out all of this internally and these are becoming fully fledged business units within their business, or are they contracting out with other companies?
I think you're going to see a mix, but what we've seen that's a bit different from Volkswagen now is that they are committing new significant amounts of funding. So they're putting 400 million euros in new funding towards building charging infrastructure. And they'd previously participated in the Ionity network, which several European automakers and others were putting funds into and were building. But this is kind of an implicit acknowledgement that that's either not going fast enough or just isn't quite going to be enough, and they really want to build that up on their own.
Can you describe what that is really quick?
Oh, sorry. The Ionity network is a fast charging network that is funded by the European OEMs that drivers of the vehicles from those OEMs can use. And each automaker is putting money into that fund to build out that infrastructure. Third parties can use it as well, but they pay a higher rate generally per charge. So there's a bit of an acknowledgement there that that's not quite enough. There's also an acknowledgement that Tesla still has a pretty significant advantage when it comes to the supercharger network. A few years ago, I think everyone sort of thought, oh, charging infrastructure will catch up really quickly. There'll be plugs everywhere. The reality is that the Tesla supercharger network is still a really significant competitive advantage that Tesla has over other automakers. The stations are in good locations. There's usually a lot of them, so you don't get there and find that there's two spots and one of them's filled. There's often many, many different spots. They're relatively high powered, so relatively fast, and they always work, or they almost always work. They have much higher uptime than some of the other networks. Now, there are other good networks building out quickly across Europe, and there is big investments being made from groups like BP and Shell and some electric utilities as well. But when it comes to automakers and sort of semi-proprietary networks, Tesla does have an advantage, and seeing VW push money into that is kind of an acknowledgement that that strategy is working for Tesla, and for them to kind of really keep up, they probably need to do that too.
For me, this seems to really hack at the roots of the problem, right? So, I mean, I wasn't going to mention this, but I was in the market for a car last year, you know, and I wanted to buy an electric, you know, an EV, but I didn't because I kept saying, you know, once the charging network is there, I'll get one. This seems to be really solving the problem. But that brings me to my question of the timing of this. Is it really driven by, you know, have charging network will sell cars, or is there some element to it of being pushed by the EU, perhaps for stimulus money? Or is there some other external force driving them to do this right now?
Yeah, there is an external force. And actually, I got to give a lot of credit to Volkswagen. When you see Dice talk on stage, he's pretty open that the regulations are pushing them in this direction. And it's no surprise that a lot of the focus is actually on China and on Europe, because that's where the strongest regulatory push is. And so the kind of backdrop that everyone has to understand in Europe is that sales of EVs really spiked in 2020. That's really because that's the first year where automakers had to meet these much tighter new vehicle CO2 standards. So they're framed in terms of the grams of CO2 emitted per kilometer driven, and each automaker has to get their average below the target, or they pay a certain amount of fines. And Volkswagen almost made it last year, but they didn't make it. And they paid some, they're probably going to pay somewhere around 200 million euros in fines, probably a little higher. And that's considered a small fine. Like the fines that many of them were looking at before they ramped up their EV sales would have been in the billions of dollars. So that regulatory push meant a lot of them actually, in some ways, built up their order book a little bit in 2019 and pushed orders from 2019 and new vehicle launches into 2020, which is why then the numbers went way, way up in 2020, because there was a very, very strong legislative reason to do that in Europe. And Dice is quite clear, Volkswagen is quite clear that they see those tightening further, and we at BNEF see those tightening significantly further as well in the next few years, and that's a big driver for what they're doing. So one of the things we're expecting is that this summer, the European Commission is probably going to announce a revised 2030 automotive CO2 target for the region, and that's going to take the reduction in grams of CO2 per kilometer required for vehicles sold in the block to go from what's previously said as a 37.5% reduction from 2021 to 2030, we think it's probably going to go to 50% reduction. And once you start to play that through and look at all the mix of vehicles and the technologies available, that probably means that over 50% of all vehicle sales in Europe probably need to be electric vehicles of some form. They could be plug-in hybrids or battery electrics, and the mix will be different for different automakers, but they probably need to be over 50% of sales by 2030. So a lot of what you're seeing right now is just automakers recognizing that that's coming. So it's better to get out in front of it and make a proactive announcement than make a reactive one after the regulator says we're pushing in this direction. That's not to take anything away from VW here, though, because I think they are genuinely leading this amongst large automakers, and they are making a very real push here.
So we'd be remiss not to point out, though, that auto sales are down. Is this really the right time to be changing your business strategy?
Never let a good crisis go to waste, right? And I think VW would say very clearly that actually the Dieselgate crisis was the catalyst for them doing a lot of this. And at BNEF, we put out something right after it happened saying, this could be a significant fire under VW to and that makes them change their approach. And I think when it shortly after it happened, I tweeted this out saying they're now my sort of dark horse bet, not very much of a dark horse anymore, but to lead the EV market in the early 2020s. And that's what's going to happen. And I think we're seeing that those decisions that were made several years ago, things in the auto industry take a while, products life cycles take a while. We're seeing all those really coming out right now with VW's strategy.
So Colin, can you wrap this a bit for us? We can hit it later in future episodes, but for now, what does this mean? So we've heard announcements from other automakers. We'll hear another interview with Dana and two of our other colleagues about GM's announcement. But what's next? What does this all mean for the auto sector?
This is a big moment for the auto sector. At BNEF, we've been saying for several years now that we think sales of internal combustion engine vehicles in the passenger vehicle segment anyway, probably peaked in 2017 and 18, and that they're actually in permanent decline now. That's always a pretty uncomfortable thing to call because peaks, when you call them wrong, you look really silly. But more and more, we're feeling more confident that we were right to call that. And now you have one of the largest automakers in the world saying on no uncertain terms, they've been hinting at this for a while, but saying in really, really clear terms that their future is electric. I think that really matters because if you're working at any other major automaker right now, you're going back and saying, well, look, VW is going in pretty hard. What's our plan? And if you work at VW, you have a very clear sense of mission. And having worked with the strategy teams of a lot of different automakers and oil and gas companies and utilities over the years, clarity of mission really, really matters for people's motivation. So I wouldn't underestimate just how powerful that is too. If somebody feels like we're sort of trying to do both things at the same time and dragging something through the mud or the strategy's a bit muddled, it's harder to rally the troops. But if you've got a really clear message, you can rally the troops better. You can get things done. You can get people really motivated. And again, I wouldn't discount the importance of that part of this announcement too.
Well, and on that note, speaking of clear mission, stay with us because after this, we are going to be hearing all about General Motors or GM with my colleagues, Alejandro and Nicholas. We'll hear about their plans for electric vehicles in the future.
Now for a very short break, stay with us. Hi, Ale. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dana. How are you?
I'm really good. And Nicholas, thank you for joining.
Hello, Dana. Thanks for inviting me in. It's good to be here.
So we're here today to talk about GM, General Motors, and they have made a pretty big commitment. So let's start at the beginning and let's understand what it is that they have come out recently and said.
So GM came out with a sustainability plan in order to become a net zero company by 2040. And that implies that has an intermediate step there by 2035 to only sell vehicles that do not produce any emission. That is, of course, an aspiration, and they have made it very clear that they aspire to that goal rather than targeting to only sell BEVs, battery electric vehicles, by that time. Their pledge of becoming a net zero company by 2040 includes all emissions, scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions that the company generates through its own operations, but also through its supply chain and through the products that it sells to its customers.
This is pretty unusual, is it not, for a auto manufacturer to target scope 3 emissions? And are there any other auto manufacturers who've done this?
There have been a few more. In fact, Ford, Daimler, Nissan have done that. I think Volkswagen as well. However, no manufacturer to date has made an explicit statement about only selling zero emission vehicles by a given date. So all other manufacturers have left that point a little bit vague. Whereas GM is, as far as I can tell, the first and only, until now, manufacturer who says that by 2035, they aspire at least to only be selling battery electric vehicles. And that's for their global sales of cars, including in their two biggest markets, one being the US, the second one being China.
So let's talk about this from the US perspective really quickly, because I must admit, I really did not see this coming. When I think of GM, I'm thinking of like a big truck ad on maybe during the Super Bowl or something else like that where, you know, trucks are tough. Have they been looking at this for some time? And is this actually a really natural progression of their business model? Or are they starting to look at this from pretty much a standing start?
So GM has been investing in EVs, in electric vehicles for quite some time. They have come out with the range extender Volt in 2012 with the all-electric battery electric Bolt in 2018, 2017. They have some history in investing in EVs. And in the last couple of years, they have also been building from the ground up quite advanced electrification technology in what they call the Ultium battery platform. And we can go into some more detail on that later on. They have been investing on that. They plan to invest about $27 billion until 25, between now and 2025, on electrification. R&D and capital expenditure, they will spend quite a bit of money on EVs. However, in terms of their sales and what they have done until now on electrification and selling battery electric cars, they haven't done great. But their production volume is somehow low. They are behind some of the other automakers that are selling battery electric vehicles, either in the US or globally. And there is, of course, this undercurrent of their recent lobbying and regulatory activity, or the activity around the regulations, primarily in the US. So up until 2 weeks after the election, I believe, it is the US election back in November, they had sided with the previous administration in trying to do two things. First of all, to revoke California's waiver in setting its own more stringent environmental emissions rules as it pertains to passenger vehicles. And they were also lobbying in favor of the more lax federal fuel efficiency standards that the Trump administration had put forward. So they changed their view literally after the election results.
So they've changed their view. So other manufacturers have as well then.
Yeah, exactly. So they have changed their view quite recently and quite abruptly, in fact. They followed other manufacturers that did the same since the election or around the election. However, there were a group of manufacturers even since 2018 and 2019 that they had sided with California to follow stricter emissions rules in the US and different to the ones that to the more relaxed rules that the Trump administration had put forward. So there was some sort of regulatory driven reaction from GM's side in order to make this announcement now. That's what I believe, and that's what I see from their recent actions in the last couple of years. Having said that, they have been developing and they continue to develop quite advanced electrification technology to allow them or to take them forward and to allow them to meet those aspirations that they have for 2030 and 2035.
So it's fair to say that you think that this is in some respect politically driven, given that the other major market that they sell in is China, and China now has a net zero target as well. Is that a fair assertion?
Oh, it is. I think it's a realization that most of the makers are coming to at the moment. That is that as you look at those net zero targets in China, in Europe, the US doesn't have one, at least yet. What automakers are doing is they're working backwards from those. So a net zero target in 2050, for example, if we assume a car lifetime of 12 to 15 years, means that by about the mid of the 2030s, automakers will have to sell zero emission vehicles in order to meet those net zero targets in the different markets where they operate. So in this case, it is definitely politically driven. Automakers practically are looking at ways now to try and meet those long-term targets.
Well, and so you referenced at the beginning of the podcast that they're going to be putting a lot of R&D money into this and that they're going to have to pivot in terms of how they're spending their money, time, and brain power. Now, I don't think this, however naively it has been said to me in the past, aren't battery electric vehicles. If you're looking at them, somebody else is making the battery and you're only making the casing. So how hard is that as a manufacturer to really pivot to a battery electric vehicle? And I think, Alejandro, you've been following the Consumer Electronics Show and you really look at a lot of these technology advancements that go into these vehicles, and they're so much more than just batteries. So what does this mean from an R&D investment standpoint? And, you know, what are we looking at in terms of what are they going to be investing in and how are things going to potentially change for their business?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I actually have a couple of counterpoints to what Nicolas just said. And I do think GM's decision is quite motivated by policy and by the change in president in the US. And I think that says a lot about how, at least I personally interpret their plans. And we can talk a little bit more about it later, but it relates a lot to how they plan to monetize their EV platform, which is based on their Ultium technology. But in general, car companies have been facing for the last 5 years, more or less, an existential crisis where two historical rates trends that benefit them are changing significantly. Those were urbanization, which meant people were moving to cities, and they were motorization, which meant people were buying more cars. And those trends have disconnected in the past few years, and now people are still moving to cities, but people don't want to own cars. And that means that we could see a peak in new personal car sales much sooner than anybody else expected. And that has determined, in our view, a lot of how they spend every buck they spend on R&D. And that has determined the investments they've done around novel ways of using cars, like those offered by shared mobility services and those offered by ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft, etc. And, you know, now that the dust has settled a little bit and COVID-19 helped settle that dust a bit because, you know, the market got tougher for pretty much all the different offerings they had been investing on, we've seen a little bit of a pullback from the car companies away from over-investing, especially on shared mobility services. And we think that that seems to be a trend that is picking up. It began last year with BMW and Daimler, which were, you know, one of the key innovators when it came to building a fully connected strategy that included autonomous vehicles, connected services, electric vehicles, and shared services. And they have both made significant changes to those strategies. Daimler has a new CEO. The new CEO wants to focus on making money, not on low volumes, rather than trying to sell a lot of cars, which was the previous CEO's idea. And they're dropping a lot of investments on shared mobility and on ride-hailing services. So I think that by not having to spend money on that, all of a sudden these car companies have more money to spend on other things that they see more potential for their bottom line in the long term. And I think that's where EVs come in. And I think that's where, you know, GM's latest announcements around EVs. So to touch upon a point that Nico made about the political motivations behind GM's announcements, I think it would be naive to believe that it was a coincidence that they launched this new Ultium platform at CES. They relaunched it because they had already launched it before, but they relaunched it and they clarified their long-term strategy at CES. And then they launched this new plan to stop selling cars with tailpipe emissions by 2035 a few weeks later. That it coincided with a change in the federal administration in the US, when for the past 4 years, they were, for all purposes, fighting anything that made them go make electric vehicles, as Nico explained. So I would like to see if they actually go ahead and execute those plans. It seems like they're investing less on new technologies around shared mobility, which could mean that they have more cash to spend on their new EV plans. But I think it's still quite soon to conclude that the decision to launch this new pledge or objective has nothing to do with politics, or is not that closely related to politics. And I think that makes it extremely vulnerable, because as we saw in 4 years alone, the Trump administration basically got rid of the stringent portion of the fuel efficiency standards. So it is very susceptible to whomever is in the White House, that regulation that is supposed to drive electrification in the US. So if you're going to flip-flop every 4 years, if there's a change in the White House, then, you know, those long-term plans become quite vulnerable.
I think there's a counter-argument to this one, in the sense that there is a point of no return. And what I mean by that, you could go back and forth in electrification plans, or you could have gone back and forth in electrification plans up until 1 to 2 years ago when investments were relatively low. But if GM goes through with its plan and invests $27 billion by 2025, that means that they have to do something with the technology that they have developed until then. Which means that even if the administration changes and even the environmental laws change and the emissions targets are relaxed, GM and other automakers that have made those investments will have to start building and selling electric cars in order to recoup the very high upfront costs that they have made. So there is, of course, this political element of going back and forth and siding with the current winds in the capital cities. But at the same time, the more that goes on, there is more and more capital being spent, technology being developed, and products being designed. So I believe that there is this point of no return beyond which you have to follow on with your plans.
Because how long does it take to get a car from concept actually out the door? I mean, we're talking about 4 years for a presidential cycle and executive orders that come therewith. It takes a good amount of time for vehicle manufacturer to actually go from concept to your driveway, right?
That's correct, especially with new technologies and what we call new platforms. A platform is a concept that involves like everything from technical designs or all the way to how you develop your supply chain. It can take a long time. I mean, it takes, let's say, the best part of 5 years and 5 years and several billion dollars to develop these electric vehicle platforms. For example, this something like the Ultium platform that GM is developing. And from there on, so let's say a 5 year period, that's the minimum. And from there on, it depending on the product schedule, it may take even longer to bring new vehicles on the market. So practically, the investments that GM and other automakers are doing now, they will be utilized up until the end of the 2020s to an extent.
The platform point is super interesting in my view, because it kind of changes dramatically the approach to making cars from a manufacturing point of view. And the companies that are working on these unified platforms for making, you know, a whole suite of electric vehicles for the future are always telling us about these benefits. And for example, VW has the MEB platform, Daimler has two platforms, I believe, depending on the size of the vehicle, the EVA and the MMA, GM has the Ultium. My question then is, if you're spending all this money and all these years building these platforms that are going to determine the future horizon of products that are going to be electric, that are going to become your sources of revenue for the long term, why would a company like GM say that it plans to license its platform to other companies that want to make electric vehicles? So it makes me think about, you know, would Tesla ever license its EV platform to another car company to make cars that are going to, you know, look quite similar to theirs, or at least have a functionality that is quite similar to theirs? So if this is like a core product for the future growth of the company, why think about licensing like your key piece of IP that is going to take you into the next generation as a car maker?
So all the things that are being developed, invariably at the end of the line, you want people to buy them. My question really has to do with consumer tastes. So in China, you end up seeing that actually battery electric vehicles have really taken off. So for the past 3 years, they were the largest consumers of battery electric vehicles. And I think only last year was the year where Europe took that title back and more are being sold actually here than in China. But assuming that that continues to be the trend in China and they remain popular there, there's a reasonable assertion that GM's strategy is aligned with consumer taste. But how about in their other major market, the United States, where it doesn't look like the vehicles are getting smaller on the road? If anything, they're getting bigger. And if they start putting out a bunch of cars that people don't want in a consumer discretionary space, especially one hit by an economic downturn spurned by COVID-19, do you really think that this is feasibly going to happen and that this idea that they'll no longer sell internal combustion engines is a true possibility?
I think that's a very good point. It has a lot of nuance behind it, and it's quite crucial for GM and other automakers that are thinking of pivoting towards electrification. One of the things we've discussed about technology all this until now, and of course people buy the technology, but also they buy the final product. So one of the main concerns or the main challenges that companies have is to build desirable products on top of the technology, of the advanced technology that they are developing. And this is quite an acute challenge, especially in the US, as you mentioned. The fact that GM's volume in the US consists of 80 to 90%, perhaps even more, of large SUVs and pickup trucks makes this transition for them in the short term quite difficult. A pickup truck in the US can contribute anywhere between $5,000 and $15,000 in earnings before interest and tax directly for an automaker. And that's some average across the automakers that sell large pickup trucks in the US. In the short term, the next, 5 years, it's unlikely that an EV a pickup truck, an electric pickup truck, will be able to have the same profit margins and to contribute as much at the company's earnings. So how you transition from your main volume now being these sort of large vehicles that contribute so much money to something that by necessity, and by necessity, I mean both technical and cost necessity, will have to be slightly smaller and perhaps not as profitable in the short term. How you make that transition for GM and for other companies, especially in the US, is going to be one of the most tricky things that they will have to get right. I don't think that's going to be easy at all for them to make this transition, but eventually they have to.
They do claim, Nicolas, they claim that with the platform approach to manufacturing EVs using the Ultium platform, they're going to be saving a lot on toolset costs for building new assembly plants compared to building those new assembly plants if you were making internal combustion engine vehicles. But if you're talking about margins that are that thick for selling pickup trucks in the US, for the example you brought up, and what Dana said about the consumers still wanting to buy big trucks, especially in the US, which is probably one of the largest, it is the largest market for GM, then the promise of savings from toolset costs, a homogeneous platform for making a whole suite of EVs for different segments, that thing has to materialize. Because as much as Wall Street likes to see conventional car companies have electrification plans, and as much as we as analysts at BNEF see those electrification plans as key to fulfill our consumer adoption forecast for electric vehicles in the long term, it comes to that, to the point of I sell now a product that makes me a lot of money, but it's not going to help me fulfill my fuel efficiency standards. It's not going to make me utilize at full capacity my new EV manufacturing platform. So I think it says a lot about the very tricky situation where GM is, and it's actually quite unique, the situation in which they are in, because of the specific segments that they have been focusing more and more and more on their pickups.
Well, and some of this all revolves around the concept that we will be able to see battery electric vehicles that are at cost parity with internal combustion engines. And actually, we at BNEF kind of keep looking at that and what that year may end up being. Could you actually share with everybody when we think it might be possible, at least as of today?
That's around the mid-decade, depending on segment, depending on country and everything. I mean, it can be as soon as next year or the year after for some segments, perhaps some large cars or smaller SUVs in Europe and in the US. But as late as even 2030, we're looking at small cars in China or smaller vehicles in Europe. The main determinant there of when this price parity, this upfront cost price parity happens, is the price of the battery, of course. And let's say as a rule of thumb, we can take the $100 per kilowatt hour as the threshold below which more and more segments start to become price competitive, and a larger share of the total automotive market is being opened up for electric vehicles. However, that price can be as low as $80 per kilowatt hour for some segment, but on the other hand, it can be as high as $120 or even $130 per kilowatt hour for some other segments, perhaps more luxury large vehicles. I think the main point to make here is that there is some visibility on that cost trajectory, even though it can still be uncertain, and because it depends on the specificities of different manufacturers and where they operate, in which segments, and what volume of batteries they buy, and all that.
I mean, this seems like it's roughly aligned. This is an assumption that when we go to purchase either in an individual or for a fleet for a business, that there will come a point where they are the same price, if not cheaper, than internal combustion engines. Now, on these comparisons, which I know people like to do, every so often someone ends up bringing up the fact that the batteries that go into battery electric vehicles are produced in some cases on very coal intensive and therefore polluting grids, and they're pretty energy intensive to make. So if you take that combined with the fact that you actually have to charge the vehicle, and additionally, the grids vary in terms of how clean they are and whether or not you're charging on wind or you're charging on coal or you're charging on gas. Are these electric vehicles, and is this strategy actually going to make that big of a difference in terms of emissions?
The short answer is yes. The life cycle emissions of battery electric vehicles are already, for vehicles that may have been produced last year, already lower than the equivalent emissions, the emissions of equivalent internal combustion engine vehicles. That depends, of course. I mean, there are cases, especially in countries such as China and the US, which are very large, and the grid intensity, the CO2 intensity of the grid, of the electricity grid, varies a lot throughout the country. You may find situations where a coal-heavy grid may make the life cycle emissions of battery electric vehicles, let's say, comparable to those of internal combustion engine cars. That is, of course, for cars that were produced last year. What happens, however, is that the electricity grid, as we know, is decarbonizing at a very fast rate, which means that by 2030, even in those edge cases that may exist now, those cases will not exist by then. Battery electric cars over their life cycle will have lower CO2 emissions. Now, there is in life cycle analysis, we have to make some, to better define what we mean. In what I mean now, in what I describe now, for example, we include battery by manufacturing emissions, vehicle manufacturing emissions, and utilization emissions. At the moment, we do not include recycling, for example, for the different components that go there. And this is still an area of active research, as I understand it, and research that we also do here to understand what the emissions are in this process. But in general, the gap between life cycle emissions of battery electric vehicles and combustion engine vehicles is relatively large. I mean, we're talking about a factor of 2 or 3 or even 4 in some cases. So battery electric vehicles can be about a quarter or even less, emit about a quarter or even less CO2 throughout their lifetime than comparable combustion engine vehicles.
Well, so to sum that one up, it means that the effort is worth the effort's worth the squeeze, I think is the phrase, or the effort that GM's putting into looking at these scope 1, 2, and 3. And as we know, the United States, their primary source of CO2 emissions are actually from the transportation sector. This may end up yielding some real results in terms of overall emissions for the countries where they're selling their products. So Ale, you look at a lot of the technology that goes into this, and you referenced a lot of the platforms. Now, I'm sure GM is going to put a ton of money into R&D here, but you've got some insight into some of the different investments, or let's say partnerships, that they've made in order to bring this tech forward. So could you tell us a little bit about that and just some of the cool technology that you see coming out?
Yeah, we can talk about some of the cool stuff car companies and GM in particular are doing around data and connectivity. You know, GM might have been a little bit late coming to the EV revolution with their super platform, but they've actually done some really interesting stuff on autonomy. They were one of the first car companies that invested in a startup that was developing software that would help cars drive themselves. That company is Cruise Automation. And when GM acquired that company in 2016, the company had raised about $580 million. They didn't disclose the details of the transaction with GM. So if you were to put a number about that value of that company, it would be more or less around what they had raised if we just follow the cash. And Cruise had a new funding round in January this year that included Microsoft and Honda. And according to media, the valuation was $30 billion. So we're talking about a company that GM bought in 2016 that had raised $580 million that has now been valued, according to media reports, not us, at $30 billion. So that's, in my view, that's a pretty good move for GM. GM also was very creative in the way they managed that investment. They basically created a separate entity that would allow other car companies to invest in Cruise Automation, even though GM had a majority stake in the company. So it allowed it to collaborate in developing a technology that is expensive to develop, such as autonomy, with other car companies that weren't ready to fully develop it in-house, but just wanted to leverage some of their R&D capital to go invest in a third party without having to get too complicated the relationship, because relationships with car companies tend to be super complicated and don't end nicely usually. So it was super, you know, I think it was super what GM did with Cruise. On the data side, GM is interesting because they've been equipping their cars with their OnStar telematics communication system for a while now. So there's a pretty robust fleet of General Motors cars in the wild, to put it in a way, that are connected through their telematics to this platform. Historically, it was a service that would basically offer you like a last minute rescue in case something happened to the car. If you paid a fee after a few years of purchasing the car, that didn't scale much. But the reality is that those cars are out there with that capability to connect to a central processing unit where data about where those cars are being taken, how those cars are being driven, for how long, in what cities, in what conditions, etc., is being collected. And at CES this year, at the Consumer Electronics Show, GM mentioned something that I thought it was super interesting. And they said that they will, in the future, leverage some of the data that they have been collecting through their telematics via OnStar to start building insurance products. So imagine the beauty of this insurance product that tells you everything about how that car that you're about to insure is used, because it's, you know, fully connected through this telematics system. You can calculate those premiums to perfection. It is an underwriter's dream to be able to have that information, because you don't have to risk, you know, how is this guy going to drive the car? You know how this guy drives a car because you have all the information thanks to the OnStar telematics system. So I think that's very, very interesting. It wasn't the main announcement at CES, but it was my favorite announcement, without a doubt, coming from GM.
You know, the insurance stuff never did quite seem fair to me. So maybe this would level it up a little bit and make it seem a little more fair to everyone paying those premiums. Ale, Nicholas, thank you so much for joining today and telling us about, you know, really this significant statement by GM and really where the industry is going. I personally have a plug-in hybrid at the moment, and I'm telling you, I want a full battery electric vehicle. So hopefully, or maybe, it'll end up being by GM in the future. But again, thank you so much and see you guys next time.
Today's episode of Switched On was edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media.
Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed. We'll be right back.